We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on when you're tuning in. Welcome to another episode of RotoGrinders Food for Thought podcast. I'm the host, Justin Carlucci, a.k.a. The Looch. Almost forgot my name there, Will Priester. It's been a great couple of days of jam-packed football, and we're here to talk about it.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I've thoroughly enjoyed the season so far. You know, and there have been some awkward spots. There have been some teams that have kind of come out of nowhere, if you will. And so I think this is it's an interesting time to be watching football. Let me just say that. You know, we'll go over some of these games and go over a few things, but I'm really excited about what I think this season could become in some of these divisions, just from a fan perspective, and not my team, just football in general. I think it's very interesting to just see some of these things unfold. So I'm super excited, and let's get it cracking.
Yeah, we're finally starting to see some trends. We're finally starting to see the true colors of some of these teams and some of these schemes and figuring out who they really are. And there's a couple of teams where we are still thinking, what the hell, and scratching our heads a little bit, and some more surprises from week to week. This is a crazy league, and that's why we love it. We talked about it last week with our great guest Berg. Shout out to Berg. Thanks for coming on. About throw everything out the window from a week to week basis, because nothing truly carries over in a sport where one play can dictate a shift of a million different things, including game script and game flow, let alone the outcome of a win or a loss. Man, I think we have to start our elephant in the room segment and go back to Thursday. And, you know, we don't want to burn this image in our head any longer than what it was, but we have to talk about the Tua situation, at least ever so briefly. I know all the mainstream talking heads had a lot of time on this already since we've been tuning in, but What are your thoughts in that situation? Do you feel like anybody was negligent in handling Tua's health? I mean, you know, it's hard to point fingers when we don't know everything that happens behind closed doors. But, like, were you surprised he was good to go going into last Thursday night football? Or a quote-unquote good to go anyway?
If here's the deal. If the team doctor sign off on it, and a neurologist signs off on it, then, I mean, you know, what is the coach supposed to do? But here's what I will say. Here's what I'll say overall. Sometimes it's just good to just, you know, embrace good old common sense. The guy's stumbling around, like, keep him off the field a little bit. And from what I've gathered, especially with the team doctor getting fired, it seems like the organization put winning before Tua's health. Now, that's what it seems like on the outside, right? I wasn't in the room for the evaluations. I am not a doctor. All I am giving is a personal opinion.
Correct.
Once again, I do not have a PhD. I didn't graduate from any type of medical school whatsoever. Not at all. But, you know, if you look at him stumbling around after the hit, it seemed like something was wrong, right? And if something was wrong, I think you get him out and make sure that he's okay. And then now, you know, it seems as if he experienced a second trauma within less than a week. And then, of course, now, you know, it's, you know, then we get the Thursday night image of him, you know, laying on the field with his hands locked up and having to be carted off. So, you know, it's just not a good look for the Miami Dolphins organization. And it comes across that winning was more important than the player's health when something actually looked like it was wrong. Like, okay, if a player doesn't show that something's wrong, you know, maybe they get hit on the arm and they don't say anything to the trainer. Like, that's on them. The player's got to say, hey, man, I'm hurt, right? But if there's a noticeable concern, I think you have to look into it. And from what it looks like, from my small vantage point here in South Carolina, watching the television on Sunday and listening to other people comment on it, it seems like they did not get this call right.
Really well said. It's not often we go on serious tangents here, but that was really well done. I applaud you. he's gracefully taking his bow, by the way, if you can't see it. But, you know, I'm with you, and it was just the perfect storm, the recipe for disaster. He could have went through that game unscathed, got hit a million different ways, and we never would have known. Like, we really wouldn't know unless we're under his helmet, unless we're walking in his shoes and walking under his helmet, Chief. You or I or anybody else doesn't know how he's feeling, right? We really don't know. But, and I don't think there was any foul play on the tackle, the sack. You know, it was just the way he landed. It was just like, you know, the 1 in 75 chance that he smacked his head the way he did, and it was bad. It's fantastic to hear that he seems to be doing well and trending in the right direction. And I mean, I don't even care about him playing football. It was just great to see. Hopefully he's on his feet and you know, he'll be back and healthy as can be soon. Cause that was so scary. And, you know, freaking Amazon was just showing it replay after replay. Of course, Twitter was like, what are you doing, Amazon? But
yeah,
you know, good news, trending positively. He's not playing this week. But, you know, you got a very competent backup in Teddy Bridgewater. Now, you know, we're getting into the sports side of it now and not the, you know, humanitarian talk. So, you know, X's and O's, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, maybe one of the best two backup quarterbacks in the league. So, of course, there's some kind of drop off between Tua and Teddy. But, you know, Theodore looked pretty good back there, getting thrown right in, all things considered. You know, he was all right. And, you know, we'll see how long Tua's out moving forward. That game collectively, you know, since we're talking about that game, took a while for the Bengals to get going. But eventually they pulled it out, and T. Higgins had an absolute field day. They were really jamming all the receivers and making Ja'Marr Chase a high priority, as they should. But, you know, that really opened up Higgins in one-on-one. And I don't think there's a big skill gap difference between Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And it showed because he kind of single-handedly took over that game. A lot of Joe Mixon bettors were really pissed off because he had all this volume and he was running into a brick wall the entire game, Chief.
Well, you know, the thing with the Bengals is this. You got to understand that Jamar is still the number one guy. But because he's the number one guy, what are teams doing now? They're trying to cover him. Guess what, folks? Jamar still had over 80 yards receiving in that game. Like, it's not like, you know, he had four catches for 81 yards. T had seven for 124. If Jamar Chase gets seven more catches, do you think he ends over 100, Luch? I mean, if he gets three more catches, do you think he ends up over 100 yards? He's probably really close. So teams really aren't doing a great job with the Bengals' pass offense. Jamar still punched him in the mouth for 81. Right?
A quiet 81.
And T hits them for 124. And Tyler Boyd wasn't even involved in this game that much. So, you know, the Bengals' problem is going to be their offensive line. If they fix that, no one's going to be able to stop this offense in a general sense, right?
Easier said than done, because that offensive line has been a mess for a year and a half now. But you're right.
Yeah.
Fix that damn thing.
But so my question is, when are teams going to stop leaving T. Higgins on an island? Because at some point, do you get what I'm saying? Like, if he keeps torching teams every week, at some point they're going to say, look, guys, we can't play. We can't try to, you know, shade Jamar Chase and leave T. Higgins on an island with whoever we – last week he was torching their best corner. It's not like he had some nobody on. Right. He was torching the best corner on Miami. So at some point, teams are going to have to play them straight up, and guess what's going to happen? Jamar Chase is going to be popping them for 100, just like that. I mean, it's how it works.
Does he just demand that? Does he just get that name recognition because he's like slightly more highly touted than T. Higgins? Like, do the X's and O's, the football guy coaches, the meathead coaches, are they just going to shade their coverage toward Jamar Chase because it's Jamar Chase, even if T. Higgins is ripping everybody? You know what I mean? But like, when you look at it, like, they are just – T. Higgins is a monster.
Here's the thing. If you give Jamar Chase single coverage, what do you think is going to happen? The exact same thing. That's the problem.
Right.
It's like we can only give one of these guys a leash. We've got to cover them.
We're in a peak DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, let Russ Cook debacle, because it could very well be one or the other every week from here on out, right? If that offense, I mean, Joe Mixon will be fine off volume. And by the way, Joe Mixon's running a lot of routes out of the backfield. I can't believe he didn't get there receiving-wise last week. But, you know, I'm pulling a Chris Collinsworth here. Here's a guy in T. Higgins who is big and fast. Like, there aren't many people like him and Jamar Chase on the same side of the football. We're spending a lot of time in the Bengals here, but yeah, I mean, listen, they got to get the ball to these two guys, and credit Joe Burrow for not really forcing it to Chase and really picking on T. Higgins, who was on an island in one-on-one. I mean, he was doing the right things, and it finally worked out in the second half. But, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if both of these guys had a really nice second half, because they're getting the target market share. They're demanding the air yards and that offense, and Tyler Boyd is simply kind of the security blanket and the red zone guy. So I'll let you finish up if you have anything else on the Bengals-Dolphins, and then give me another elephant in the room from this week.
No, I'm good, man. I think we can just kind of let that sit there. This may drastically change the Dolphins season, but we'll see. I think my elephant in the room this week, and hear me out here. I'm going to not a no-name team, but a team that hasn't been great for a series of years, but they seem to be trying to turn a corner, and that's the Detroit Lions. And when you have a team like the Seahawks coming to town, it feels like you need to beat the Seahawks, right? If you really want to turn the corner. Now, I'm going to give them a slight pass. And by slight, I mean slight for this reason. Amon-Ra St. Brown is out. Swift is out. Who else? There was another guy that was out, I think. You know, they had some injuries in key spots. They're out.
Oh, yeah. So DJ Chark was gone, too.
Yeah, DJ Chark is out. And so in the end, they still almost win the game. But that's the Lions. Almost doesn't count. Like, you've got to – if you really want to turn a corner in this league, you got to win these types of games at home, and they still have not been able to accomplish that. Now, when I look at this team, do I feel like the culture is different? I do. But I want to take us back to something, Luch. And look, maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong about this, and I'm open to it. This isn't something I have the strongest of convictions on, so don't, I don't want people to think that. But during the Jim Caldwell era, this team was actually winning. They were going to the playoffs, right? And they just could not get over the hump. Do you remember that?
Of course.
They were a playoff team, but just couldn't get over the hump. So they fired Jim Caldwell. I want to know how many winning seasons they've had since then. Now, this is a team that was winning, and Jim Caldwell was fired. How many winning seasons do you think they've had since that firing?
None.
Exactly. And so there goes my point. A lot of times, you know, we fire a coach and we think it's the right thing to do because we see other teams firing coaches with winning records and bringing in young coaches, the shiny new toy. And guess what happens, Luch? They get worse because that seasoned coach knew the team. And yeah, and look, there's a such thing, I think, as needing a new voice in the locker room. But, and I get that, but we've seen it with tons of teams, the Colts, the Eagles. Now, the Eagles are on their way back, but, you know, tons of teams, the Cardinals, but tons of teams we've seen it with, and you would think that teams would learn their lesson by now. The Browns have had 30 coaches. The Giants, you know, they get rid of,
Coughlin.
Well, yeah, get rid of Coughlin. And mind you, it was probably time for him to go. I understand that. But they haven't had a winning season since Coughlin. You know what I mean? And so, I know this is about the Lions, but gosh, I'm really hoping. I'm almost secretly a Lions fan this year. I'm hoping that they can have a record above 500 for a change.
They're in that beautiful transition where they're fun. And now soon, some serious changes are going to have to make. Like, the roster's getting there. We got to make some action in that secondary. Like, I'm glad they invested some assets into some young defensive linemen. So you got the shiny new Ferraris, and sooner or later, you need the garage, above it and behind it. So, you know, they're finally fun, but soon it's going to be like, all right, we're fun, but now we got to become good. And, like, they're inching ever so closely. I mean, they played some very competitive one-score games, man. And you mentioned culture. Opening week, looks like the Eagles were going to blow them out of the water. Surely enough, here comes football guy Dan Campbell. His team plays for him. Those guys are running through a brick wall for Dan Campbell, I think. We're talking, what was it, a field goal game? I mean, this game was a shootout, and they could have rolled over. DK Metcalf was feasting. What a fun shootout with Metcalf. Hawkinson on the other side looking like primetime Tony Gonzalez or something. And Geno Smith looked like he was torturing people for 500 yards at West Virginia. Geno Smith playing some competent football. I mean, I know he's had some easier matchups, but one could argue he's playing at a higher level than Russell Wilson is right now. This Denver team we spent so much time talking about with all of our guests, we just can't figure him out. What did Berg say last week? He was trashing Nathaniel Hackett, and he was right about how it was just a horrible fit. And my panic meter has drastically risen about the Denver Broncos. We'll get to them. Before we get to them, we come on the show and we talk about when we're wrong a lot. You know, this is a safe space, which is good. But can we just, like, pat ourselves on the back a little bit? First of all, get on over there to Scores and Odds, because the Parlay IQ tool for same-game parlays is unbelievable. Our projections team, which is intertwined with the RotoGrinders projections team, runs thousands of game simulations. You put together a same game parlay, as soon as you add one leg to your bet slip, it changes the correlations and you can see what fits best with your selections. And every time you add a leg to that parlay slip, the data will change and you can see what statistically makes sense based on thousands of simulations and what does not. And we had Chris Jamito had a monster payday a couple weeks ago using the tool, like monster, thousands of dollars. So definitely worth checking out at Scores and Odds. Heading into Monday Night Football, our guys, our NFL experts at Scores and Odds, collectively are up over 40 units. That is just an amazing start. I want to virtually shake your hand, though, because you and I, went back to the big dog.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This week, we pounded on the table about Derrick Henry, and boy, oh boy, did he pay off for us, my friend.
So let's talk about that, right? And so, you know, I guess this will be a small prop segment. And it's just sometimes you just got to use common sense. Why in the world would the books ever have Derrick Henry at 70 and a half yards because of a bad start, right? They over-adjusted because of the bad start. But here's what had not changed for Derrick Henry: his involvement in the offense. Nothing had changed. And so we got this mass, it was almost like a discounted prop in a sense. And, you know, I had someone in the prop shop say, well, you know, the Colts have been really stingy against the run. Well, that may be true, but the Colts hadn't seen Derrick Henry. They had not seen King Henry. And I think King Henry had to ramp up just like anybody else. He was out half the year, needed to kind of find his footing. And guess what? For Derrick Henry, if they haven't realized, the longer the season goes, the better he gets, actually. Because teams are wearing down and he's getting tougher. And so, you know, it's week three, right? Or week four? Week three.
That was week four.
Wow, yeah. So it's week four, and he comes out at 70 and a half. And I said, oh, my goodness, this is terrible. Had him in plenty of stuff on Prize Picks. At Prize Picks, he was at 73 and a half. I didn't care. Guess what, folks? Hit it in the first half.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
You know, it's almost like he didn't play in any preseason either. Looked terrible in week one. Oh, Henry looks slow. He's washed. Derrick Henry, afterthought. Week two, a little bit better. Was great against the Raiders. Looks like he had some pep in his step. The line blocked really well. And I think, you know, the Titans showed me something. And maybe the biggest game of the season for them that can really define a division push or not, because this thing is wide open. And they go into Indy and they score 24 first half points. Now, the team that drives me crazy from week to week and puts me on mood swings Monday mornings, they're getting outscored 64-7 in the second half of games. So I don't know what the issue is, but Henry looked great and his best run of the game was called back due to a hold. I mean, we saw vintage Derrick Henry, and you know, that was one of my kind of elephants in the room. The Titans getting a huge win on the road, getting back to 2-2. They collapsed against the Giants in the opening week. We remember that. They could have laid down. They go and get slaughtered at Buffalo. They could have just quit right there. 0-2. Everything sucks. They play a big game against the Raiders, who were a playoff team last season, who have all these weapons. They held Devontae Adams in check. They win a big ball game. They go to Indy as 3.5-point dogs and just manhandle them in the first half. It was much closer in the second half, but they get a big win. And that's why we love NFL football. But that's classic Tennessee Titans winning the games they shouldn't on paper and losing the ones that they should. And we'll see what happens moving forward. You know, Mike Vrabel, you know, much like Dan Campbell, just has that locker room. He just has that locker room. He's one of those guys that keeps him on an even keel. And we'll see where the Titans go. I mean, Derrick Henry looks fresh. We're going to talk about injuries soon. I really thought Treylon Burks broke his ankle. I was, you know, really worried about that. Looks like he just has turf toe. We know that could linger. Going to miss a couple weeks, but that could have been a hell of a lot worse for Treylon Burks and that offense, who I think is going to really start coming into his zone when he gets healthier in the second half and they get him more incorporated. So big win for the Titans, you know, getting back to 500, and for the Colts, you know, losing to the Jaguars and losing to the Titans and tying Houston. It's not great for your divisional hopes right off the bat, especially, you know, when you have identical records and things at the end of the season and you're losing all the tiebreakers. So one of my elephants in the room is, of course, you know, I'm a Pennsylvania guy, New Yorker at heart. The Eagles were off to an absolutely horrid start this week. Hurts with the pick six. The Jaguars looked really good. This was the first time the Eagles really had adversity this season, for the most part, in a regular season game. We needed to see how Jalen Hurts would do. You know, A.J. Brown, new face in the offense. If Sirianni could keep the play calling fairly balanced. And you know what? They just gradually plugged away at it. The Jaguars shot themselves in the foot a couple of times, put the ball on the ground, and the Eagles were able to take advantage of it. So I'm going to give credit to where it's due. The Philadelphia Eagles have earned every ounce of national media attention that they're currently getting as the last undefeated team in football. I don't care that it was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't care if it was the Pee Wee Giants. I don't care who it was, the Little Giants. They were in a hole. They scrapped all the way back, and they took control of the game when it counted, and the Eagles are a huge threat to maybe even make a deep Super Bowl run. So I really wanted to see something like that out of the Eagles, where there was no momentum and everything that could go wrong in the first half did, and they were able to claw all the way back. Just from a fan perspective, and I hope they stay healthy, and I hope they keep the ball rolling, because that team's a lot of fun to watch, Chief.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Here's what I will say, though. The Jacksonville Jaguars did what they were supposed to do as a team that's growing and developing and trying to get better. They pushed the Eagles a little bit, and then their youth showed as the game went down to stretch, right? Like that's pretty much what happened. And so for Jacksonville, here's what I think Jacksonville's goal is. And this is about the Eagles, but I'm going to come back to them, because we talked about Jacksonville a little bit last week. So I just kind of want to talk about them a little bit as well. What they've got to do is say, okay, let's handle our division, right? Like that should be their goal this year. Let's handle our division. If they handle the division, they're going to come out just fine in the end, right? And even if they don't go all the way, handling the division is going to open it up for this young team to get the experience like that. So that's what they've got to do. Handle the division. If you do that, the wins will come. The wins will come. You're muted, my brother.
I'm good for that. Huge culture change there, bringing in Doug Peterson, Urban Meyer. That whole situation, I don't think could have been any worse. That was, you know, so we're seeing positive steps here with Jacksonville, and they're going to be a threat. This AFC South is wide open. These teams all have flaws. They all have injuries. I know the Titans are in a body bag for sure. Of course, the Colts are dealing with Jonathan Taylor and God knows what. Shaq Leonard got hurt too. But they're also, you know, I want to respectfully say, I don't know about the Jaguars, but I would not want to see a Colts or a Titans team in January. You know, they're a team that can get when the division get in, and they have enough grit and veteran leadership that no one's going to want to see them. You know, if the Jaguars get in, it'll be a great story. You know, they've never been there before, though, Chief, right? Like, that's a moment. Like, it just seems like that's a moment. They're kind of on the same path as Detroit is. Maybe like a step ahead of Detroit, right? Like,
yeah,
but not by much. They're fun, and they're going to be competitive. And that division race is going to be big. What else from Sunday, you know, caught your attention? Any big games or big moments?
I think the last thing I'll say is, and look, man, I'm going to talk about two things very quickly. I'm not going to hammer in my Aaron Rodgers takes, but they won in overtime against the Patriots with the third string quarterback. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. The Broncos. Look, I picked the Broncos to win the division, and I probably got that wrong. Now, it's early. They could turn this thing around, but I don't think they're going to win the division. They could possibly still make the playoffs. Javonte going down, man, that's just tough, man. But all in all, this team does not look good at all. I've only seen them maybe move the ball what I feel like. Well, I didn't watch the game on Sunday, so I can't talk about it. But I did watch some of the other games, and they just seem out of sync. And so at any rate, I'm going to stick with my pick because that's the direction. But I don't feel good about it. They've got to do something here with this team or with this offense, right, to make it easier to move the ball, easier to reach something. Because it feels like 1950s football here, and it's not a fun team to watch. Like, I'd rather watch the Lions lose than watch the Broncos win, if that makes any sense.
Well, the problem,
it's not a fun team.
On top of getting their chemistry together, and getting on the same page, they are just not a disciplined football team. I'm gonna ask you a rhetorical question: who leads the league in penalties? The Denver Broncos. So not only do they have to collectively get their chemistry together and get on the same page and change some things up personnel-wise and, you know, mix up some play calling, they're doing all the little things wrong as well. Shooting themselves in the foot, too. The turnovers. I mean, red zone turnovers, first couple weeks as well. They're in trouble. My panic meter has gone from like 4.5 to 8 in no time. So I'm with you. I guess like there's a couple things we could highlight. Kenny Pickett finally getting the universal, hey, you're our guy for the rest of the season. So what's your take on that? Is the timing right?
I mean, might as well be. What I'm trying to figure out is how is this going to affect Deontay Johnson? Like, that honestly, that's what I'm concerned about. How much is this going to affect Deontay? Are the targets still going to be? Because this offense could totally shift and Pickett could have a new favorite target. I don't know. I'd love to know, but I don't know. And so I'm going to have to stay away from the Steelers for a couple weeks until I can figure this out, unless, he comes out week one and everything looks about the same. Now, from what we saw with Trubisky, it was about the same. Deontay was going to get the most targets on this team. And then, but Freiermuth was also picking up tons of targets. I just really want to see how it's going to go. I think if Trubisky wasn't your guy, then, you know, if you felt like you saw something in Pickett to let him out there, let him out there. It sure looked like the team was behind him. It seems like they had fun playing with him. And so we'll see if that materializes. How that comes to fruition this week, because they've got a tough matchup with the Bills, which I don't expect them to win. If they're anywhere near competitive in this game, Pickett's never lose. He's not going to go, you know, he won't be coming out, which it looks like it's his team anyway, but you get what I'm saying. If they come out and they're competitive against the Bills, it's a tight game. Like, people are going to be talking about Kenny Pickett, even in a close loss.
Two more. We'll do a quick lightning round here, and then we'll look ahead, and we'll talk about some injuries and how they're going to affect things, and we'll talk a little bit about the DraftKings world as well. But so the kings of the collapse, the Baltimore Ravens, shut out in the second half.
Nope, I'm not accepting that. The Baltimore Ravens are not the kings of the collapse.
All right, that's why we're going to talk about it. That's why we're going to talk about it.
You know how I feel about this. Harbaugh is the king of the collapse. You can't pay Justin Tucker to kick primarily extra points. Do you realize, Justin, that he cost them another game this season by going for it on fourth down when you should have just taken a field goal?
Man, you just called me Justin. That's what women call me when they're mad at me.
I'm not mad at you. I'm just, it's a point here. Harbaugh cost this team so many wins over the last three seasons by not utilizing a field goal kicker that you pay money.
A lot of money.
That's my point. Yeah, sorry. Let me rephrase that. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. A lot of money. I don't understand why he gets so aggressive all the time. Because it's cost him wins and playoff seeding over the course of the past three seasons. If they kick the field goal yesterday, at worst, this game is tied at the end. You're going to overtime with a chance. Last season, there, I don't know, inside the 10-yard line, they go for it. He doesn't get it. They lose the game. You get what I'm saying? Like, let the man kick the field goals. And sometimes you just got to live to see another day. So I'm all for going for it on fourth down in the first quarter at the 3-yard line when it's 0-0. But when you're at the 35 and it's fourth and two, and it's the fourth quarter with 8 minutes left, kick the field goal. But right? Like kick the field goal, take the points, and let your defense figure it out. Now, their defense isn't playing very well, and I understand that too. But at least you're giving yourself a chance with the field goal. And I understand if you get the fourth down, okay, you're going to eat more clock, gives you more opportunities for touchdown. I understand that too. But you got to, come on, take the points. It's because you're paying your kicker so much money. You got to let the man do his job.
What are your thoughts on the shootout we saw between the Chiefs and the Buccaneers, which was really over before before it was over, it was over. What does it say about either side here? Are you panicking about Tampa Bay? Are you more impressed with Kansas City? A little of both? Did it solidify anything for you after seeing the 41-31 win by the Chiefs over Tampa Bay on Sunday Night Football? Or do we have more questions?
I mean, the Chiefs are going to do their thing. They're an offense that's going to be hard to stop. And so get out, and they're rolling, and you can't stop them. You can't stay in the game. That's what's going to happen. You're going to get steamrolled. And so what happened is, in that game, and I actually did watch that game, they got out in a hurry, and the Buccaneers looked up, and it was 28-10? 28-7? So, you know, something crazy like that. 28-17, I think, at the end of the half.
Yeah,
and they never recover. Never. They needed to get stops. They couldn't get timely stops, and that's what happens when you play a high octane offense. No matter who's out there, you know, it's just how it works.
Yeah, and I know the game script was a little troublesome early, but they had 6 carries. That's it. I know they're in a bit of a hole, but they completely abandoned the run. Like, completely abandoned the run. That's half the recipe of beating a guy like Patrick Mahomes and company. You got to get the ground game going a little bit. And I know you have Tom Brady, but, you know, look at Brady's numbers were, you know, incredible. 385 and 3 touchdowns. That's great, but they lost. You got to run the ball. You got to get that going a little bit. 6 carries? How is that even possible? I know the script was flipped early, but there was still a lot of time left. There's a lot of time left. 14-3, you know, I get it. Run the ball a little bit. Even 21-3 at the 11-minute mark, early second quarter, you're down 21-3. 11 minutes left in the second quarter. Establish a little bit of ground game. That kind of blew me away. Again, Tampa Bay is going to be competitive for that division, and we're talking about October football, so... and they scored 31 points. So, I mean, who am I to judge their game plan there? So,
well, I mean, but hey, you know, end of the game, defense is playing a little loose. So we know this. They're trying to march down the field and score points.
Yeah.
But Tom did have 195 in the first half, for what it's worth.
He did.
195 yards passing in the first half.
So I'll throw these out there, and then I'll talk about some injuries, and then we'll look ahead. Like, we're you know, everyone wants to print the shirts for the Eagles, but – here we are, and Dallas without Dak is 3-1, and the Giants are 3-1. Daniel Jones is hurt, though, too. But you got to credit these teams. I know the Giants have had some ugly games, and they were able to fend off the Bears. And, of course, Dallas with the win over Washington, which is fine. You know, they're not a very good football team, but Cooper Rush did more than enough to – you want to talk about good backup quarterbacks? This guy has ascended into the top 5 backup quarterback conversation. Maybe he's the best. Maybe he's top 3. But – two teams that look heavily flawed, but are both 3-1 right there you know, battling against the Eagles, you know, in the NFC East here. Do you have anything to say about the Giants or the Cowboys before we move on?
I we'll see what happens when they get into division play, because that's really where it's going to matter for them overall. How does this division fare out? Giants get the Packers this week, and the Eagles are playing the Cardinals. The Cowboys are playing the Rams. So, looks like the Eagles should get a win. The Cowboys, this should be a much tougher matchup for them. And the Giants, Packers, I feel like this is a fairly even matchup overall. So we'll see how it goes.
That's fair. Let me rattle off some injuries. It was a really bad week for health. So let's hope these guys, at least most of them, are on the mend sooner than later. Of course, we talked about Tua, who won't be playing this week, and we'll see what happens. There's no timetable for his return. Cordell Patterson, the 2-2 Atlanta Falcons, got a big win over the Browns. He's going on IR, and that stinks because he's such a great football player, such a hybrid guy, running back, wide receiver, you know, special teams. He was a great kick return for a really long time. He is dealing with an injury. He's on IR. He's going to miss Atlanta's next four games. Ugh, Javonte Williams. We talked about Denver, and you hate to see a young kid like this with an ACL injury. I'm rooting for him, but we know the history with ACL injuries and running backs, so the odds are definitely against him. But he's such a great runner. I wish Javonte Williams a speedy recovery. As I'm keep going down the line here, Jonathan Taylor got a little dinged up as well. Test came back negative. They play on Thursday against the Broncos, so we will hopefully get some news on John Taylor sooner than later. Daniel Jones. He's considered day-to-day. Not only Daniel Jones, but Tyrod Taylor got a concussion. Poor guy can't catch a break. So, looks like Davis Webb might start for the Giants.
Man.
That game's in London against the Packers. And I agree. I think I'm not ready to say Aaron Rodgers is trash, as it was frequently mentioned last week. But I do think the Packers are just carrying this, you know, name recognition that they usually do. Davis Webb across the pond on Sunday morning. I don't know, but I will be watching. That will be interesting. Treylon Burks, I mentioned earlier, I thought he broke his ankle. He did not. He has turf toe. He's going to miss a couple of games, which is good news for the Titans. Jamison Crowder's going on IR after breaking his ankle during Sunday's win against the Ravens. So that stinks. Speedy recovery for Mr. Crowder, hopefully. Jahan Dotson is probably one of the last big ones on offense. Super talented young receiver who's going to miss a couple of weeks with a hammy problem. A product of Nazareth, PA. Jahan Dotson. He's out this week against Tennessee. So Tennessee's missing Burks. Washington's missing Dotson. That's terrible for everyone. But here we are. I mean, geez, I rattled a lot of stuff out there for you, Chief. So
Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor. He plays Thursday against Denver. Test came back negative. They're almost in do or die mode already, Chief, right? Like, they got to start stringing some wins together.
Yeah, absolutely. They just have to. Bottom line, I'm not even going to. They have to. That's it.
Okay. Well, you know, Denver and Indy is not on the DraftKings main slate, which is great. So, I mean, we could look at a couple of salary-saving options here and then talk about some of these game environments coming up. I'm looking at Atlanta. I mean, the thing – I'm probably going to avoid this situation completely in DFS. I mean, Algier, I think the kid's super talented. Him and Huntley pretty much split work. But – I'm just, you know, Tampa Bay has a pretty good defense, and I'm thinking this might be a tough game script to want to play either one of these guys. They're both sub 5K. They're pretty good value. But, you know, I don't know what the snap share is going to be like. I think the game script will be bad for running backs. So, honestly, I know, you know, there'll be some questions about Atlanta value this week, and people across the DFS community will be, you know, talking about them. I'm probably just going to avoid that situation altogether in DFS.
I'm with you 100%.
Let's look at another situation here. You know, we talked about Jahan Dotson being out for Washington. Well, he's not confirmed out. Ron Rivera said might keep him out a week or two, which is coach speak for he's probably not going to play. So Tennessee definitely has some holes in the secondary. Caleb Farley's been terrible. Do you think this helps Scary Terry, or does this kind of – are you keeping an eye on, like, Curtis Samuel lines and stuff like that?
Well, Curtis Samuel's probably going to get his no matter what. So, like, he's not a guy that – like, he's involved in the offense, period. So even if Dotson's there, Samuel has a role with the team. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel about it. In terms of, you know, the overall scheme, it seems like it's going on more to – Gibson, Scary Terry, Curtis Samuel, probably the tight end position. He and Tom, like, that's what it feels like should happen. But hey, who knows with Riverboat Ron? I'm not sure. But but all in all, I think those three guys, I think or those four guys, I think their role is secure, and everything should flow through all of those guys.
Let me throw this one at you. Not an injury situation, but change of personnel. We briefly talked about Kenny Pickett, and you said you're staying away from Deontay Johnson, and I don't blame you. What do you feel? How do you feel about taking some shots at George Pickens? I want to see what his prop lines open up at, and he's 4,300 on DK. 15 targets across the last 2 weeks. He had like 70 of his yards in the second half when Kenny Pickett came in. Just something to keep an eye on. Should be a negative pass-happy game script with Pittsburgh against Buffalo. Might be playing a little Jekyll and Hyde guessing game here with where the volume's going to go, but I don't hate the idea of maybe keeping an eye on George Pickens' receiving lines here, and the books just have really no historical value to base any production off of with Pickens being a rookie, so he's not. You know, I'm going to keep an eye on Pickens, and maybe I'll pick my spots here with him.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I said, Pickett is – I just want to see what happens.
Yeah, I understand it.
Yeah. I just want to see what happens.
It's tough to invest money against the unknown, but if he gets a really low number hung up on the board to open things up, it's going to be hard for me to not take a shot or two over there. You know, we didn't say anything about the Carolina Panthers. Do you want to have a moment? They play the Niners, who are playing on Monday night.
I want no Carolina Panthers moments this week. These guys.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
So – another injury situation. Again, like, I don't think anyone's going to play Teddy Bridgewater. He's 5,400. I mean, I can't recommend to play Teddy Bridgewater. But how does this affect the skill players group here against the New York Jets? Are you panicking a little more than if Tua was at the helm with a guy like Tyreek Hill or Jalen Waddle, who aren't cheap on any DFS platform?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the Dolphins are going to be fine, to be honest with you. And here's what I mean. Teddy isn't going to lose them games. Now, is he going to win them games that they need is the question. But he's not going to lose them too many games. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I know he had an interception late in that other game, but typically Teddy's not a turnover machine. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and, you know, make too many mistakes. So, I mean, if these guys can keep rolling, like, Teddy's going to be fine in his offense. He's not as young as Tua, but in terms of playing the quarterback position, like, he's been in the league. So he's not going to go out there and get rattled. So I think this team can still win games, but I don't think they can go all the way.
That's fair. One more guy I'm keeping an eye on for prop lines to open and for a DFS maybe one-off is – Robert Woods with Treylon Burks being out. I mean, he's the de facto polished, versatile receiver that's left in that offense. I'm hoping his volume picks up a tad. Of course, we know the target tree is typically pretty limited, but you know, if the King's rolling, they're just going to keep feeding him. And of course, since they're in the thick of the division race here, but you know, the Robert Woods prop lines have been pretty friendly and he's coming off a dud. So if we see something around 42 and a half or something like that, I'm taking a total shot here, a total dart throw here. I'm going to be interested in seeing how Robert Woods as the primary target is going to unfold with Tennessee against a Washington defense, which has shown to be extremely vulnerable, as we saw Cooper Rush do his thing last week.
Yeah. We'll see. I think Dak's trying to hurry back. And I don't think his job is in jeopardy. Like Cooper Rush did back up, so doesn't matter how well he's playing. If Dak's ready, I think they bring him back into the fold. So we'll see how it goes.
Do you think travel will affect the Vikings at all coming home from London? You know, they're playing the Bears, obviously. You know, Vikings at home, you know, without any context, seems like a direction bettors are going to want to go, and you know, DFSers are going to want some Jefferson exposure and anything like that. But coming off a huge win over the Saints, that was such an exciting game in London.
Yeah, right? No, that, seriously, may have been the most exciting game this weekend in terms of back and forth. You know, like it ended up being a really good game. Andy Dalton, backup quarterback, and there you have it. You know, 25-28. Can you imagine what happens if Lutz makes that 61-yard and they go into overtime? And that's what an incredible branding tool that would have been for the NFL overseas. Even still, good game. I honestly don't know if the Vikings are going to beat the Bears here. And it's not that I don't think they can beat the Bears, but this team is so inconsistent every year, in my opinion. And you know, and I don't know what's going to happen with Justin Fields here in terms of his development and how he gets into this game. So I don't know. I'm just not sure how this is going to go.
I don't know either, but I'm bringing up scoresandodds.com, and we're going to talk about some spreads and totals and maybe some decent games that we like here. So I can tell you that the Bears are 7-point dogs. I kind of like that. I kind of like the points there.
I get it for sure.
Hey, one team we didn't talk about is the Chargers did what they were supposed to do, and kind of the fact that nobody's talking about the Chargers right now is great for them because they handled business after a hell of a lot of question marks and Herbert health issues and, you know, do they have the right guy coaching the team and Keenan Allen forever missing a couple games every season, and they just handled business and no one's talking about them, which means that's a good thing for the LA Chargers. So they got the Browns, who obviously are a gritty team in Cleveland. I think that game might be pretty close. We didn't really talk about either team. If you want to mention anything here, the Chargers are 3-point favorites, 47.5 total there. I think that sounds probably about right. And I'm probably going to avoid a lot of this game.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting game. What I will say is Nick Chubb is leading the league in rushing, and that's with Kareem Hunt getting plenty of touches as well. Very, very interesting running back combination. They should be able to move the ball on the ground against the Browns. So we'll see how that goes. But Chargers coming across the country playing at 1:00. I actually think the Browns might win this game, even though they lost to the Falcons. As crazy as that sounds, Chargers coming across the country. I just the Browns may win this game.
It's not crazy because this is the NFL. Every week there's surprises. Every damn week. Everybody's so good, man.
Let me ask you this, just temporarily.
Yeah.
How much better is this team when Deshaun Watson gets there? Like how much better do you think this is?
Like without any context, he might take a game or two to get hit a couple times and actually be in a game environment in that offense. Like, he can have the playbooks and do whatever, like, off the, you know, on downtime, right? But until you're in the game, I mean, what, week 11 he's coming back? I think he'll significantly help, but it just might take a couple weeks. It might be too little too late bringing him back. You know what I mean? Like, they could be very competitive. That defense is good enough. And Amari Cooper's still been very good for the most part without him. I think he definitely helps. Definitely opens things up. Like, strictly X's and O's and football talk here. We're not talking about anything off the field there with Deshaun Watson, because, you know, Lord knows we've done that already, and, you know, we've had the whole summer and everything that went on. We can't ignore, like, his God-given athletic talent. That is just a complete difference maker, right, Chief? Like, that didn't go away.
Yeah, absolutely. So
they could be the best team in that division with Deshaun Watson. Will they be record-wise? It depends how much they can tread water and really what happens with Baltimore and Cincinnati.
Well, Baltimore and Cincinnati have started out stumbling.
Yeah.
So you get what I'm saying? Like, it's if the Browns can if the Browns can be anywhere near five, like what if they're at 500?
Then they
got a shot.
Then the roof is the ceiling. Then I'm probably betting Browns live to win the AFC for the hell of it. Like I'm probably taking some shots. I should probably take some shots now with some lunch money since, you know, I had a pretty good week.
I had a really good week this week, bro.
Let me hear about it.
It was insanely good in the prop side. Like I barely missed any props. It was insane. So I was really, really, really grateful. And it just, bro. I made really good money this week. I had a lot, and I made a lot of field goal kickers. I had four field goal kickers that all hit, and it was glorious. That's all I can say. Had a ton of Henry, ton of field goal kickers. It was a glorious week.
You know, me and you put out a bunch of content. We're both up over four units in our Scores and Odds premium picks alone, just premium picks. But you have so much content and so much invested with the prop shop and our prize picks that doesn't even do it justice. So tons of ways to get different exposures to your portfolios. The Scores and Odds premium is just one of them. Like, for example, I wrote an article on Friday. I write sometimes. I do a lot of editing and a lot of back-end stuff, but every now and then I've got to scratch the itch and put the pen to the paper, my friend, and I went a quick 4-0 with my free article play under the Scores and Odds news section. So yeah. That was a really good week, too. I had Rashard Penny over 59.5. I used Gridiron IQ and saw a big discrepancy in types of scheme. Seattle's a big zone run team, and Detroit is terrible about, you know, stopping the zone run. I thought that was huge. So Gridiron IQ, just one of our many fantastic tools between Roto Grinders and Scores and Odds, can really help you decipher some things here. So Rashard Penny was a big winner, which went hand in hand, which I took the Seattle Detroit over, which was a cakewalk. And, you know, you got to love the cakewalk total hits, right? So there's like 90 points in that game. It was ridiculous. Anyway, let's carry some momentum over. Of course, we really don't have any prop lines up, you know, recording on a Monday night here. So I wish that wasn't the case. So you mentioned, I'm just looking at some other games here we could talk about before we get into story time and GPP food of the day. Green Bay's 8-point favorites across the pond. We don't know the quarterback situation for the Giants, but what's your reaction with that 8-point spread?
I mean, do we think they're good enough to actually cover it?
Well,
like, they're going to get scored on.
Like everyone was drinking the Kool-Aid last week, 9.5 against the Pats, you know? That didn't work out very well.
I mean, listen, first of all, the Patriots have probably one of the best coaches from our era. In terms of winning and crafting teams to win. Now, he's kind of had to rebuild his team, and, of course, they're not looking as good as they did with Brady there. So it wasn't Brady, was it Belichick? It was a combination of both. They can meet in the middle. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the Giants are better than they have. And I think they're better than the Patriots. They're going to get it done in a different way. And so I think we can't look for Daniel Jones to throw for 300 yards passing. That's not his game. He's more like a 200-yard passing guy. And as long as Saquon is getting involved and doing his thing, Daniel Jones is going to pull some of those reads and run them himself. And he just needs to pick up 7 or 8 yards and hit the deep shot when it's there. Like, that's their game plan, I think. And so as a result, I think they'll be fine.
He is day-to-day. I think Vegas believes he's going to win. I know we're neutral field here, but still, I feel like this would be 9 or 10 if we're on a Davis Webb. I feel like we're looking at a 10-point spread, like, you know, Green Bay, neutral field, still got Aaron Rodgers. So I think Vegas thinks Daniel Jones is going to play. And Yeah, I mean, those games in London typically stay close even when they're bad. So I'm kind of with you. If Daniel Jones plays, I think I might consider backing the Giants to have a little action with my breakfast on Sunday morning.
Yeah. For sure. Whole show.
Yeah, we actually do get Bengals Ravens on Sunday Night Football. So want to talk about a banger of a divisional game. Two teams that pivotal game. Huge game in the division. Huge game. It's not on the main slate, but give me your synopsis of this one. That game is in Baltimore. 3-point spread, 48.5 total. Like, does anyone have an edge in this one, Chief? The collective sigh.
Maybe. When you're looking at teams like this, man, it's, to me, it's like splitting hairs. Do you know how many hairs you have on the top of your head, Justin?
Probably a little more than you, but
a little more. And that's what this feels like, splitting hairs. These guys, I mean, flip a coin, right? Like, flip a coin. Who do you think wins this game straight up?
The collective sigh. Yeah. You know, I'm going to take Baltimore straight up.
They're at home. I can count on Harbaugh to screw this up for them, though. Here's my thing. Baltimore really is giving up a lot through the air this year. And that's where the Bengals are going to hurt them. Like, now, right. Like really talking about it. Like, that's where the Bengals are going to hurt them, through the air. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, Lamar kind of balls out against Cincinnati. I mean, last five games against NC. Let's see, last October – he had 250 through the air, 88 on the ground. He took five sacks, though. But he has three of the last five games that have more than one touchdown. Man, he had a game in 2019 with 152 rushing yards. Just ridiculous. So, man, I just think I like Baltimore in this spot, you know. Long time for Cincy to kind of be idle here after a big win. But you're right. I mean, did the weather affect Buffalo not being able to move that football against, you know, Baltimore?
I almost don't feel like it did. Like, they still moved the ball. It was just in a different way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. This is a tough one. I'm going to go Baltimore. I want to say money line. I don't know what the juice is right now. Oh, man, I'm not paying that juice. Minus 177? No thanks. No thanks. I don't like that hook, though. You can get Baltimore at -3, though, in a lot of books. That's probably my lean right now without doing any analytical research. Gut call. What about you? I know you want Harbaugh to blow this thing just so you can come on podcast next Monday and we can be like, Jim Harbaugh really does stink, like, for sure. Which he does. You're right. So can you back Cincinnati? Cincinnati money line here?
I mean, maybe. You know what? You take Baltimore, I'll take Cincinnati. One of us wins.
Okay.
One of us wins.
All right. You're right. One of us wins.
That's a win-win for the pod. It's like literally a win-win.
Got any story times or food of the day or like a combination of both?
Man, definitely have a food of the day. So I talked about Chef Klaus Dawson the last time, but I actually had some of Chef's food. Had some what we call dirty rice down here in South Carolina. Oh, man, so good today. Rib tips with Carolina Gold barbecue sauce. Chick smoked chicken legs with Carolina Gold barbecue sauce. Just incredible. It was fantastic. Now I know you guys can't get that out of the state, but it was really good. I'm also going to talk about another restaurant here, Soul Cafe. I went to Soul Cafe a couple weeks ago, and you guys may know. I think Soul is mostly local as well, but it was really good. If you're in the Charleston area, check out Soul. Just good food. Yeah, let it go. And hopefully, people enjoyed the engagement story time last week. Things are progressing well. Planning for some weddings. It's incredible, man. It's incredible. Yeah, so what a great you've time also,
and listen, first of all, if we have any listeners down south in Florida, man, we're thinking of you. I hope all is well. I could not imagine, being in a situation that a lot of people have been in with the storms coming up. And I bring that up as well because I know you kind of dealt with some of the remnants of, the hurricane that ripped through Florida. So we're definitely thinking everybody. And, I just wanted to throw that out there, Chief. By the time it got up to you, was it downgraded to like a tropical storm, if I'm right?
It was. But listen, man, if you would have been at my house, you would have thought it was not. The wind was blowing hard all day and it was raining all day. So imagine just wind and rain for pretty much from the time so it started in the middle of the night, sometime in the morning, and it probably didn't stop until 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon officially. And so imagine just all day, rain, wind, and it flooded some places. So my internet was out for pretty much all day, all the way through Saturday. But power stayed on mostly. We had some flickers and stuff like that. So listen, man, I was really grateful. And, if any of you are in Florida, you're able to listen to this podcast, and hopefully we've been able to help uplift your spirits just a tad. I don't feel like we had as many shenanigans this week, and that's okay. Come back next week, and they'll be sure to show up. But hopefully everybody's okay, your families, and I love you from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah. Same. Well said, Chief. I do have an interesting food of the day for you. I went to a Celtic festival 2 weeks ago. A lot of Scottish food there and some stuff I normally probably wouldn't get up in the Poconos, but I was down in like Hellertown, Bethlehem, which I've talked about from time to time. There's a lot of stuff going on in the Lehigh Valley. A lot of people don't give the Lehigh Valley some credit that it deserves. But anyway, so that was cool. We saw some like strongman competitions. They were called the Highland Games, where these massive dudes were like throwing kettlebells up over their head, like, 60-pound weights, and had to like clear a certain height and stuff like that. I mean, like, these guys were just massive, massive dudes in kilts, but like, man, they would all kick my ass. They were huge. But that was cool to watch some like strength competition and stuff like that. But the food was great. But I actually went to a like Scottish pub called the Braveheart Highland Pub in Hellertown. And of course they had a bunch of awesome like traditional American food, but they also had a Scottish section with a bunch of good stuff. And I had this dish, they're called Britties. They're almost like an empanada or something like that, but it was beef roast in like a pastry shell, and you serve it over fries, and it was topped with onion gravy. Oh man, it was different, but man, did that hit the spot. So got a little cultured in Hellertown, Pennsylvania. Big shout out to the Braveheart Highland Pub. If you're ever in the Lehigh Valley area, I totally recommend hitting it up and checking it out.
Yes, sir.
We getting out of here?
Man, I think we're bouncing. Wow.
We're out. Check out the Chief on Twitter. What's that Twitter handle, buddy?
@ChiefJustice06.
Look me up at DJ Carlucci. DM us anytime. We want to hear your food spots. And if you have any questions or any comments, message Chief, not me. I'm just kidding. Anyway, for my guy over here, Will Priester, I'm Justin Carlucci. Have a great week, everybody, and good luck.